I'm humbled. I don't know what to say now after this very beautiful explanation about God. The way they explained it, it was fantastic. Just for their health and for their progress, inshallah, send the salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Before I start, a book was introduced at the beginning, and maybe through emails, to be a companion to these discussions that we are making these nights. The book is the one written by Faiz Kashani. The name, the Arabic name is Al-Haqa'iq fi Mahasin al-Akhlaq, the truth in the beauties of behavior and ethics. It is translated as Spiritual Mysteries and Ethical Secrets. It's a very comprehensive and beneficial book for all of us who want to improve our behavior. And as I said, this book was written in the last year of the Faiz Kashani's life. He lived 83 years, very effective life, and he produced many books. And this is the gist of his ethical life put into a very concise book, which is, of course, very useful. Anyone who wants to buy it, I think it's available on Amazon. Was this available on Amazon or not? But it should be Amazon.co.uk, not Amazon.com probably. It should be available there. Anyone who wants to get the book. If there are many people who want it, then I think we can order it in bulk. It will be cheaper from the UK. Anyhow, we were talking about mu'amalatun nafs, interaction with our own selves, and the question that what should we do with ourselves, what should we do with our lives is always our question. Now, we had several concepts discussed. The hadith says that the principles of interaction with the self is seven. First of all, always to be fearful of ourselves. We have to also take God against ourselves, the desires, the whimsy wishes that we usually have, and we shouldn't actually respond to it. One was khawf, then jahd or juhd, whatever, whichever way we pronounce it, which is struggling, making effort all the time, tireless effort during our lives towards progress. And hamlul adha, accepting all troubles, receiving with open heart the troubles which come on our way, to pass through them, riyada, spiritual discipline, talabu sidq wal ikhlas, sincerity, and honesty. Now, the sixth thing which the Imam mentions here is ikhrajuha min mahbubaha, to keep it away from what it likes and loves. Now, this seems a little bit difficult to understand. Well, in our life, we love many things, we desire many things. Why should we keep ourselves away from it? Now, first of all, one very important aspect of our life in the contemporary world is that we have to somehow set ourselves based or reset ourselves, because we are already set by our environment, reset ourselves based on Quranic values, not on the values which is being produced daily in our environment, in the society in which we live. Sometimes we are carried away by the force of the values, the principles, the maxims which are being forced upon us by society. And then we try to explain the Quran, interpret the Quran in light of these values, and somehow make the Quran to follow these values. Say, well, we are Muslims, but of course we are modern Muslims, and we want the Quran to be like whatever is taught to us in our society. This is not correct. Of course, we have to live in our times, but that doesn't mean that we have to just walk with people who do not believe in God, walk with people who do not believe in what, in the values that we believe. So it's very important. One of the major sort of principles which is being publicized in our time is that everyone should follow what they want to do. Hawa. I think Hawa, that is the fleeting desires of the soul, has become the main principle in the name of whatever human freedom, human rights, or whatever. Of course, we are not against human freedom or human rights, but we have to know what values we are teaching to our children. One the old couple told one very interesting thing in an interfaith meeting. They were Christians. They said, the world has turned upside down. In the past, our children were following our values. We taught our children what is right, what is wrong. Now we are following our children in whatever they think is nice, is fun, is giving you pleasure. We are following them. And this is not correct. The Quran teaches us that there are certain values, no matter how you love to violate or whatever, you should design your life, arrange your life based on those values. Following Hawa. Hawa is just what I like, what I love. Who, everyone should be free to do whatever they love, whatever they like. Of course, there is a truth in this, but it doesn't mean that everyone should be free to violate whatever is obligatory on us to follow as a value taught to us by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, I mention that because sometimes we love things very much which are against certain principles for progress of our soul. We have to keep away from them. But this ikhrajuha min mahbuba has another meaning as well. And that is, sometimes we love things which bar us to go ahead, to move forward. We have to pass through those obstacles. Lan tanalul bir. This is one example of course, this sentence given to us by Imam. You know, sometimes the traditions of Aima alayhi salam is very difficult for us to understand because it is pitched at a different level. It's pitched at a different level, very spiritual, and for people like us who are not familiar with the spiritual world, we get confused, we cannot understand it. And it needs lots of effort, contemplation to understand what Imam really means to say here. Now, we have one verse in the Quran, in Surah Ali Imran. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. You never reach birr. Birr is good. Birr is progress. Birr is closeness to Allah. Whatever brings us towards good, light, is birr. You never can achieve birr unless and until you give away from what you love. What does that mean? It means that there are things which fetter us in this world. وَقَعَدَتْ إِنْ دُعَا كُمَيْلِ, very beautifully recited in English. وَقَعَدَتْ بِي أَخْلَالِ, my chains had chained me to the ground, to the earth. I cannot come up. What are these chains which have chained us to the earth? We cannot move up. We cannot move high towards the heaven. Now, these are things which we love most. And we do not think that there are certain things that we take for granted that they should be there. Yes, of course, I have to love them. It should be around me. We never think that sometimes these things are our fetters which chain us and does not let us to go up. the doors of heaven would not open for us. This verse in Surah A'raf is frightening. I say it's frightening. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَذَّبُوا بِآيَاتِنَا وَاسْتَكْبَرُوا عَنْهَا لَا تُفَتَّحُ لَهُمْ أَبْوَابُ السَّمَاءِ. Those who deny our signs and feel arrogant to even think about it, to even give the probability that it's right, because they are so arrogant, they think, no, whatever I think, whatever my parents have taught me, for example, whatever I have learned in the university, that is right. They don't even want to give a thought about my signs. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَذَّبُوا بِآيَاتِنَا وَاسْتَكْبَرُوا عَنْهَا لَا تُفَتَّحُ لَهُمْ أَبْوَابُ السَّمَاءِ. The doors of heaven. Heaven, not paradise. Sama is the malakut, the higher world, would not open for them. It means their soul cannot move up. Their dua would not go through. This is, we know that many of these things which are mentioned in the Quran have used a metaphorical language, because there is no other language for communication between physical world and spiritual world. So when he says the doors of heaven would not open for them, it means the souls cannot move up. They are chained. Even if they go, the doors are closed. The dua cannot go up until we know that we have to detach ourselves. Amirul Mu'minin says that dunya and akhirah are two opposite routes. You go one way, you get farther away from the other side, and vice versa. Now, we are taught that dunya and akhirah should not oppose each other. Ad-dunya mazra'atul akhirah. Dunya is the farm, the harvest for akhirah, of course. However, if dunya is attachment, we'll talk about the dunya in detail later on, inshallah. If dunya is attachment, it doesn't allow you to somehow detach yourself and go up, then of course, that is a sort of contradiction between the, there is a sort of contradiction between the two. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفَقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. Now, let me quote a very interesting hadith here for you. The Prophet, peace be on him, have said, if anyone can pray two rak'ah of salat, you try it. If anyone can pray two rak'ah of salat, lam yuhaddith nafsahu fiha bishay'in min ad-dunya, does not think about anything of this world, does not speak to himself, lam yuhaddith nafsa, does not speak to himself in that two rak'ah about this world, not think about it, ghafara Allahu lahu ma taqaddama min dhanbi, whatever sin he has done would be forgiven. Now, very easy, isn't it? Just go tonight, go home, stand in prayer and say, Ya Allah, I want to do two rak'ah, only thinking about you, and then immediately think, well, if my sins are forgiven, what am I going to do later on? You see, you cannot do it, because you are very much attached to things here. Yes, Amirul Mu'mineen, when he was praying, he didn't even feel, you have heard this story, that once he was hit by an arrow in his foot, and the doctors couldn't take it out, and it was time of salat. When he stood for the salat, the doctor said, this is the time. He cannot feel anything now. He is not in this world anymore. He is in a higher world. Well, that is Amirul, that's why he is Amirul Mu'mineen. That's why he is Ali ibn Abi Talib. But for us, we have to try. You see, these are the sort of targets. We should not be disappointed by hearing these things. These are the targets, and we have to move towards these targets. We have to be able to gradually detach ourselves from this world, because eventually we are going to leave it, isn't it? Eventually, whatever it is, whatever worries are there, whatever attachments are there, we are going to leave. So gradually, as the Prophet, peace be on him, said, Mutu qabla an tamutu, die before you die. Of course, it's not mercy killing or whatever. Die before you die means before you are taken from this world by force. voluntarily give it up. Voluntarily. And if you voluntarily give this world up, everything in this world will become pleasurable for you. And there is one very interesting hadith that it is said in the hadith that the dunya is a very strange thing. When you are after it, it runs away. When you leave it, it comes after you. It's really like that. If you want to detach yourself, everything is coming towards you to somehow surround you. If you go after it, you never get what you want from this dunya. Anyhow, إخراجها من محبوبها and ربطها في الفقر, tying the soul in poverty. As I said, when we talk about our interaction with the world, we talk about poverty and wealth and all these things. It should not be confused with what certain ascetics and mystics do. They say we don't want anything from this dunya. You know, there are some Christian orders, like Franciscans, the order which the present Pope is a member of. They actually, when they want to become a member of that order, they have to take a vow of poverty. And vow of poverty means that we would not own anything of this world. Whether they can do it or not, that's a different thing. Because owning sometimes is a sort of conventional thing. Sometimes things are in heart which we own them. Anyhow, that's something that they do. I don't want to say it's good or bad. However, here what it means, رَبْتُهَا فِي الْفَاقْ, doesn't mean that you take a vow of poverty that you do not owe anything in this world. It means that you always remind yourself that you are no one, you are nothing. You are the needy towards God. And he is, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ أَنْتُمُ الْفُقَرَاءُ إِلَى اللَّهِ. Remember this, you are needy towards God. وَاللَّهُ هُوَ الْغَنِيُّ الْحَمِيدُ. Allah is the needless, the praised. If we think about it deep, we realize the pleasure of this knowledge, that we are in absolute need, and he is in absolute needlessness. Sometimes I think, Ya Allah, you don't need me. Of course, he doesn't need me. You know, for example, we love our children because we need that love. Because that love fulfills something in us, makes us more complete. There's a perfection in that love. For Allah, there is nothing. He loves us, but there's no perfection for him in that love. You see, this is the meaning of needlessness. He's absolutely needless. And then I say, so why do you look after me? Why do you care for me? Why do you give? Why when I turn to you, you respond? Why do you forgive? You see, when we think deep about it, we really love Allah. Because you see, what sort of being you are? You are absolutely needless of me. I'm absolutely and totally in need of you. And then you interact with me the way you interact. You treat me the way you treat. This is amazing, isn't it? Now, sometimes we forget this, that we are in poverty, that we are in absolute need of Allah. Now, this is the soul. The soul, Feyz Kashani mentions in this book, this soul is a very, very strange thing. One of the aspects of the soul is its divine sort of feeling. Because the soul controls the body, we can do whatever we want, move, go, come, eat, drink, acquire things. We think that we are independent. كَلَّا إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى in Surah Alaq. كَلَّا إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى أَرَّآهُ اسْتَغْنَى. Man, as soon as he or she thinks that they are needless, would transgress. And this is why we see all these transgressions in this world, because we think that we are needless. رَبْطُهَا فِي الْفَقْرِ. Tie yourself in poverty. Tie your soul. The soul is very elusive. It wants to run away. It wants to say, no, I don't need anything. I am the king in this world. I mentioned this story of Iblis, I think last time I was here. Well, I don't remember very well, but it's interesting. Once Isa alayhi salam said to God, "Ya Allah, isn't it possible that you forgive Shaitan, Iblis, and in that way he would come to his original place and the people are relieved from his deceptions?" God said, "Yes, I can. I love to do that." And Isa alayhi salam said, "What is the condition?" He said, "There is no condition." He just regrets and said, "Say, I made a mistake." Because unless we acknowledge that, we are going to continue with mischief, isn't it? If we acknowledge that we made a mistake, if we acknowledge that, if we regret what we did, then of course we can correct ourselves. We can rectify things. So he says, just says, "God, I made a mistake, forgive me." I will forgive him. Isa was very happy, said, "Okay, can you make it possible that I see Shaitan and give him this message?" He said, "Yes, go in such a place and you will meet Shaitan and you talk to each other and tell him." And there is a long conversation in this encounter. Anyhow, Isa alayhi salam says to Iblis, "I have interceded for you and God has accepted to forgive you. Wouldn't you like to go back to the original place that you had?" He said, "Yes, I like very much." He said, "Okay, you can. God will forgive you." He said, "What's the condition?" He said, "No condition. Just say, God, I made a mistake. Forgive me." Iblis thought a little bit and said, "This is a good deal, provided God tells me he made a mistake and I forgive him." And I go, this is not Shaitan only, it's us as well. You see, many a time we think God is making mistake and we have fallen into different situations because of his wrong decision, isn't it? It was destiny. God made it. If I made a sin, God, why did you allow me to make a sin? You see? Now, exactly what Shaitan said. Rabbi, bima aghwaytani, you made me to go astray. You see, sometimes we become very Ash'ari. Shaitan was very Ash'arite, sort of, had Ash'arite thinking that everything which is done in this world, even the sins, is done by God. So, now, this is when we let the soul to manifest its sort of kingdom that it thinks it has. If for awliya Allah, for the prophet, why someone becomes a prophet or an imam, we think that just precariously Allah chooses someone and says, "Now you are imam and others should follow you." No. It's because of these qualities, the faqr, poverty that they feel. Sometimes we say, "We don't want anything for this world from Allah. These are sort of trivial things." We don't ask for trivial things from God. We only ask for akhirah, for example. Again, you see, you think, you take for granted whatever Allah has given you in this world, and you say, "Oh, well, I do it myself. I can do it myself." Allah said to Musa, "Musa, even for the salt of your food, ask me, because you are in need of me. If I don't want you, wouldn't have that salt, isn't it?" For everything in this world, everything which we are given, of course, is given to us by God. The problem is there are so many intermediaries that we do not see the hand of God. We only see these intermediaries. In Akhirah, it's the other way around. We don't see the intermediaries. We only see the hand of God. That's why the Quran says, Malik Yawm al-Din, or Malik Yawm al-Din. He is the king on the day of judgment. Because you see it. You see that behind every medium, behind every cause, is the hand of Allah. So if we think like that, of course, you become humble. You always think about God. You love God because you the relationship itself is something which produces love in our hearts if we know God. There's something Faisal Kashani mentions here, which I will come to it later. Very, very interesting thing he says. But there is one sentence in Dua Arafah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. the second part of the Dua Arafah, it says, Elahi, this is very interesting. Kaifa asta'izz. Asta'izz means seeking izzah, seeking dignity, seeking independence. Elahi, kaifa asta'izz. Wa fi dhillati arkaztani. You have created me in the center of humility and nothingness. It is. Not me, Jibreel, Mikael, the whole universe, the whole angels, why they are in center of humility and need? Because for every moment of their existence, they are in need of Allah. The Christian world had this notion that Allah had created the world and left it. It works for itself. Now, we never can think like that. Every split of second, this world should be fueled by energy of God, by power of God. He is holding it. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُمْسُ رَفَاطِرْ. Quran is huge in its meaning. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُمْسِكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ أَنْ تَزُولَ. Allah is holding the heavens and earth so that they do not disappear. Of course, if for a split of second he withdraws his attention, they disappear. So there is no independence here. There is continuous creation, second after second. Now, everything is in the center of need and humility and nothingness. Okay. Now Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, Elahi, kaifa astaiz wa fi dhillati arkaztani. You have placed me in the center of dhillah, of need, of humility. This is what they realize. You see, we talk about it, they know about it. This is the difference. This is the difference. Feyz-i Kashani says in this book, when that knowledge which is light in your heart, in light from God, comes into your heart. We said that there are different types of spiritual knowledge. One knowledge sought for itself. One type of knowledge sought to be practiced so that we get that ultimate knowledge. Of course, what is practice is fiqh, is akhlaq. Then that light would come into our heart. He says, when that light comes to your heart, you don't talk about things anymore. We say God is only a word, a concept in our mind. We don't know him. But when that knowledge comes, you know him. We say that we are in need of God. We don't know it, we say it. But when that knowledge comes, you see it. This is the difference between us and prophets and imams. So he says, Elahi, kaifa asta'iz? How should I feel dignified? How should I feel dignity in myself? Wa fi dhillati arkaztani. Now the second sentence is more interesting. Wa kaifa la asta'iz? Wa ilayka nasabtani. How shouldn't I feel dignity and dignified while you have attributed me to yourself? You say, you are my abd. You are my creation. If I am your creation, I'm great, I'm huge, I'm proud. Isn't it? This is our izz. So, without Allah, without God, you see, these 7 billion people on the earth with 7 billion types of thinking, wills, beliefs, we are nothing. We are no one. We just chat and talk and argue and go. But when we feel that we are connected to him, then we are great. Then we are huge. Then we become someone like the Prophet who Allah says, إِنَّ فَضْلَهُ كَانَ عَلَيْكَ كَبِيرًا. His grace is great on you. You have received something that no other creation has received from me. Anyhow, this رَبْتُهَا فِي الْفَقْرِ means this. You have to tie yourself in this feeling of poverty. Feeling it, initially we should feel it until that knowledge comes and we see it. We see that we are poor, we are nothing, we don't have anything, and everything is provided for us by Allah. Now, these were the usul mu'amalat an-nafs, the principles of dealing with our own self. Now, the third aspect of interactions that the hadith mentioned was usul mu'amalat al-khalq, the way we have to deal with people. Now, this is in itself a new door, a huge field for action. And nothing of other aspects would be accepted if we fail in this. This is very important. أصول معاملة الخلق سبعة: الحلم, forbearance, والعاف, forgiveness, والتواضع, humbleness, والسخاء, generosity, والشفقة, compassion, والنوس, wishing well for people, والعدل, والإنصاف, justice and equity. These are the seven principles that you have to practice when you deal with people. Now, the interesting thing here is that al-hilm wal-af, forgiving and forbearance, comes before as-sakha, generosity and giving. Why? Because when we help people, when we are generous to them, we somehow feel a sort of superior to them, isn't it? We feel that we are somehow patronizing people. It gives something, some sort of pleasure to us. Of course, we have to give. Whether we feel that or we do not feel that, we have to give. It's good to help people. It's the most important quality in human soul. However, forgiving and forbearance is more difficult. You may readily, if a poor person, if a poor relative come and ask you for help, you may readily do it. But if some of your relatives have done something against you, it's more difficult to forgive them, isn't it? It's more difficult to tolerate the ignorance of people. Isn't it more difficult? So here, forbearance and af, forgiveness, come first. Forbear people, tolerate people. Tolerance is not only between different sects or different religions. Of course, that is a very good thing, tolerance. Tolerance of bad behavior, tolerance of rash people, tolerance of ignorant people, who do not know how to behave, who upset, violate, offend. This is when you have forbearance, it means that you actually just brave this through with tranquility, with calmness, with honor. This is what the Quran always tells us. وَإِذَا مَرُّوا بِاللَّغْوِ مَرُّوا كَرَامًا. When they come across, laghw here is just this ignorance of people say things which are somehow produced by their bad behavior, abusive language. When they come across, they go honorably. They don't retaliate. Now, about helm. So the first thing is helm. Helm comes before af. Af is when someone does something wrong to you and you want to forgive them. Helm in our day-to-day interaction, we really have to tolerate people, to tolerate those who do not understand how to behave. There are many examples from A'imma alayhi wasalam, from the Prophet, peace be on him, about this forbearance. In Khutbatul Muttaqeen, there is a sermon in Nahj al-Balagha, Amir al-Mu'min describes the muttaqeen, those who are fearful of God. The The occasion of this khutbah is very interesting. It's a lesson for us, the Shia of Ali. We are Shia of Ali, okay? It's very interesting. The occasion is this. Once Amirul Mu'mineen, probably, this is how we gather from different traditions which have come to us. We understand this is the occasion of mentioning this. Once Amirul Mu'mineen came out of his house when he was the caliph. You know, when he was caliph, then of course everyone wanted to come, pay tribute, say, Ya Ali, we were with you from the beginning. It's always like that, isn't it? From the beginning, I knew that you are right, they are wrong, like this. Now, he came out of his house, a group of people were sitting outside waiting for him. Amirul Mu'mineen said, Who are you? What do you want? They said, Ya Ali, nahnu min shi'atik. We are from your Shia. Amirul Mu'mineen looked at them and said, I don't see the signs of my Shia in your face. I don't see that. Apparently their hammam, which the khutbah is actually told because of him, the sermon is told because of him, was present. He said, Ya Amir al-Mu'min, who are your Shia? Who are your followers? He would have said, My Shia are muttaqeen, those who fear God. You see, Shia is not a name. It's not just, you say, okay, because we know Ali was the immediate caliph after the Prophet, we are Shia. Those who say Abu Bakr was immediate caliph are Sunnis. This is, of course, if just because of this knowledge of history, Allah wants to put some people in hell and put some other people in paradise, what sort of God is that? Really, I mean, think about it. It's not possible. It is the way, why we say Ali. Because we say Ali had qualities that we have to follow. Nuh and Ibrahim lived several thousand years apart from each other. And when Allah describes Nuh in the Quran, says, وَإِنَّ مِنْ شِيَعَتِهِ لَإِبْرَاهِيمُ Ibrahim was one of his Shia. Ibrahim never had known Nuh, of course. But Ibrahim was behaving like Nuh. إِنَّ مِنْ شِيَعَتِهِ لَإِبْرَاهِيمُ So, he said, My Shia are muttaqeen. There, Hammam would have said, Ya Ali, safli al-muttaqeen. Describe for me who are muttaqeen. I'm sure all of you probably have read this khutbah al-muttaqeen, the sermon of the God-weary in Nahjul Balagha, the way Amirul Mu'min describes them. Who are these muttaqeen? And then Amirul Mu'min goes on describing them. Well, initially he objects. He refrains. He says, Ya Hammam, ittaqillah wa ahsan. Fear God, be good. I don't want to describe for you who muttaqin are. He says, no, please describe for me. Again, Amirul Mu'mineen says, no, it's fine. Just do good. He insists. And Amirul Mu'mineen, when he starts to describe this, Hammam feels in his heart, Ya Allah, if this is muttaqin, if these are the Shia of Ali, who am I? And then at the end, the khutbah says, at the end, he dies. And Amirul Mu'mineen says, this is how the mu'izah affects the receptive hearts. And لو أنزلنا هذا القرآن على جبل. This is exactly the same thing, isn't it? لو أنزلنا هذا القرآن على جبل لرأيته خاشعا متصدعا من خشية الله. Had we revealed this Quran to a rock, you would have seen that rock would have become humbled. But what your hearts are made of, I don't know. What your hearts are made of, I don't know. Had I revealed this to a mountain, it would have been humbled. Anyhow, in that khutbah about muttaqin, Amirul Mu'mineen says, يَمْزُجُ الْحِلْمَ بِالْعِلْمِ وَالْقَوْلَ بِالْعَمَلِ He combines Ilm, knowledge, with helm, tolerance. You see, the higher our knowledge go, the more we know, less tolerant we become about ignorant people, isn't it? If some, especially in spiritual knowledge. Oh, I do Salatul Layl. What these people are doing here, for example. Something like that, you see. Here in this book, Feyzi Kashani says, sometimes we want it's not in this book, it's somewhere else. It says, for example, about Riya, showing off. It says, for example, you know, this soul, nafs, is very elusive, very elusive. I don't want to do Riya, I don't want to say, for example, I'm doing Salatul Layl every night or fasting every Monday and Thursday. He says, for example, someone invites you on a Thursday to eat. And instead of saying, I'm fasting, thank you, I don't want, you say, it's Thursday. That's me, I'm fasting every Thursday, isn't it? Oh, it's Thursday, are you offering something to me? You see, he says, this is how the soul, the nafs, deceives you. Now, with regards to knowledge, especially knowledge of religion, this is very deceptive. I know a little bit more than someone else about religion, then I don't want to listen to anyone. I want to say that whatever I say is correct, whatever I say is right. Now, if that was the case, just imagine, sometimes Ashab al-A'imma actually advise their Ashab to tolerate people with lower faith. And they were, of course, they became very upset. Why people behave this? Why your Shia should behave like this? And they became angry, upset, telling them off. A'imma alayhim salam, the Imam alayhim salam said to them that, if I want to behave the way you behave with people of lower faith, just imagine what is the distance between my faith and your faith. Of course, we are children compared to what, not even children actually, compared to what they know. The more they know, the more tolerant they are. Just take the example of Prophet, peace be on him. The more he knew, the most ignorant people, he cared about them. He didn't say, you don't know anything, you are nothing. No. So this helm, يَمْزُجُ الْحِلْمَ بِالْعِلْمِ, he combines the muttaqi, combines forbearance, tolerance with knowledge. He is knowledgeable, he is tolerant. وَالْقَوْلَ بِالْعَمَلِ, and saying with action. He doesn't say things that he doesn't do. And whatever he says, he has already, as Amir al-Mu'min says, he says, I swear by God, I never have told you to refrain from anything that I have not refrained myself. I never have told you to do anything that I have not done myself. And that is why his word goes to the heart, penetrates the hearts. And that's why I cannot come and preach you from my own words, because it doesn't have any effect. But when I read you from Ali, from the Prophet, from Hassan Hussein alayhi salam, it penetrates through, because they are the ones who have acted based on that. Now look at this. In Al-Kafi, there's a hadith about Hilm. لا يكون الرجل عابدا حتى يكون حليما. A person cannot be an abid. Abid is someone who dedicates most of his life to worship. Cannot be abid unless they are halim, tolerant. Because when you become abid, your rank raises, your degree goes up, your knowledge goes up, because ibadah brings knowledge of God. Then, of course, you have to tolerate those who are less than you. Those who have less knowledge, less faith, you have to tolerate them, you have to be kind to them. And in this way, of course, people can benefit from an abid. If an abid is harsh, is quick-tempered, cannot tolerate any mistake, then, of course, people would turn away from them. There is a beautiful story from the Prophet. I say this and I finish this part for tonight, inshallah. Now, a beautiful story from the Prophet, peace be on him. Once, a Bedouin, you know, Bedouin were very frank and rash people. When they came to city, they used abusive language. They couldn't tolerate anyone. So a Bedouin came to the Prophet and asked for some help. Prophet gave him whatever was at his disposal. It was not much. He started to use abusive language to the Prophet. Is this what you give, for example? The hadith doesn't say what he said, but very bad language. Very bad language. To the extent that the companions of the Prophet wanted to come, arrest this man, beat this man, and God knows what to do. You know, some of the companions of the Prophet also were very rash. So God knows what they wanted to do. This Prophet said, don't touch him, don't touch him. Then he said, let's go to my home. He took him to his home, and there were some more there, whatever Prophet wanted to give him, some more, not much. And said, okay, take this as well. Now, the man looked at the house of the Prophet. You know, house of the Prophet just was just a room with a curtain, behind the curtain his wife, and in front of the curtain people went and visited the Prophet. The man looked and actually became ashamed of himself, that I have asked, I thought this is now the leader of the Arab, this is now the king, I come to him, he has to give me whatever I want. And he became ashamed. He said, Ya Rasulullah, I apologize. I'm sorry of what I said. The Prophet said, okay, sleep with me tonight here. He slept there. Tomorrow he said, you know, yesterday you used a very bad language, abusive language. But when you came to my home, you spoke nicely and you made me happy. Now, my companions don't know about this. Would you like to announce in front of my companions as well that you are happy? Now you are happy with me, because if you go like this, they may chase you and they may kill you. He said, yes, of course. So in the morning, the Prophet went to the mosque with this man and said, this man used an abusive language yesterday against us. Then he regretted that, and he said things which made me happy. And now he wants to say that in front of you. And the man said, yes, I apologize, I was wrong. And the companions all also became happy. Then the Prophet said one thing. This is very interesting. He said to his companions who wanted to actually attack this man, he said, you know, the example yesterday between me and you is like someone whose camel has shied away. You know, when camel shies, they run here and there. They would not submit to anyone. So his camel has shied away. And then his friends want to go and help him. Everyone runs from one corner, shouting at the camel, and the camel shies even more. And that man says, please do not help me, leave me with my camel. And takes a little bit of feather, goes gradually towards the camel and tries to calm it down, and then takes the camel easily. He says, this is how we have to deal with the people. Some people are like that, like shying camels. We have to deal with them like that. This is, of course, a man who is prophet of God, isn't it? We are not like that. As soon as someone abuses us, we become angry. Oh, you have abused Islam. You have sworn against Islam because we think that we are Islam. And someone abuses us as abused against Islam. This is how we behave. يمزج الحلم بالعيل والقول بالأمال. Say a salawat, we go to Maqtal now. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. I mentioned this verse from Surah Ali Imran. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. You never achieve birr unless you give away from what you love. Now we see the highest example of this in Karbala. Of course, nothing in this world was more dear and loved to Imam Hussein than those members of his family who were killed. You see, every one of them, when he described, you see how he loved them, every one of them. Now, one member of his family, of course, was exceptional because he was somehow raising memories of his brother in his mind. He was a memory of his brother, and that was Qasim ibn al-Hasan. The historians differ how many sons of Imam Hassan alayhi salam were present in Karbala, but what is unanimously accepted are five. Five sons of Imam Hassan were present in Karbala. Three of them were killed, and one of them was captured because he was very young, he couldn't go to war, and the other one was injured. Now, Abu Bakr ibn al-Hasan, Abdullah ibn al-Hasan, who was very young, 10, 12 years old, who went to somehow defend his uncle and was killed on his lap, Imam Hussein. That was the most sort of heartbreaking event in Karbala as well. And Qasim ibn al-Hasan, these three were killed in the battle. Umar ibn al-Hasan was very young, of course, and just a young boy, and he couldn't go to the battle. He was captured. And Hassan ibn al-Hasan, who's called Hassan al-Musanna, and then his progeny became prominent, of course, leaders of Banu of Al Ali. He was injured with 18 injuries and just was left there as dead. When they came to cut off the heads of the corpses, one of his mother relatives was present, Asma ibn Kharija, and said, "You do not touch this man because he is my relative. I will take him." And he took him and some treatment. He was healed and went back to Medina. So he was actually saved in Karbala, Hassan ibn al-Hassan, and then married with Fatima bint al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now, with regards to Qasim, it's very heartbreaking. The way he wanted to go to fight. He was very young, 13 years old. And he wanted to fight like Ali Akbar and like others. Of course, the first member of his family who went to battle was Ali Akbar, his son. And this is what Imam Hussein wanted. That's first my son, then others. You remember yesterday we said that the companions, the Ashab, they said, until we are alive, no member of your family would go to battle because we want to protect them. Then when you are dead, you know, with this army. The Maqtal says when Ali Akbar came to ask for permission to go to the battle, you know, it was usually single battles and then the soldiers attacked from every quarter. فَاسْتَأَذَنَ أَبَاهُ فَأَذَنَ لَهُ. He asked permission. Immediately Imam Hussein gave him permission. Go, my son. And then, you know this story. After he went, tears fell down the eyes of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that, Ya Allah, you witness who is now going to fight these people, who's the most similar person to the prophets. And when we wanted to remind ourselves of the prophet, we used to look at Ali Akbar. But when Qasim went to ask for battle, Imam did not permit him. First of all, he was very young. And secondly, he said, my brother has given you to me as a trust to look after you. How can I send you to the battlefield? And The Maqtal says that he started to kiss his hand. Please let me go. Then Imam Hussein hugged him, and they hugged each other. They cried for a long time, both of them. Imam Hussein cried, Qasim cried. And then eventually, Imam Hussein allowed him to go. And there was a chronicler. You know, every army, in every battle, every army had a chronicler. And the chronicler of the on the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was Uqbat ibn Sam'an. The chronicler, there was a couple of chronicles of, on the other side. He says that we were in the heat of the battle when a very handsome boy came out from the other camp, and his face ka'annahu was like the bright moon. And he came, he was saying, we didn't know who this son is, who this boy is. And I actually later on asked who this boy was, but he started to introduce himself. It was quite common, people coming to battle, actually mentioning a couple of lines of poetry, introducing themselves, saying that I have now come to fight you. He said, "Entun karuni, ana farul Hasan. If you don't know me, I'm a branch of Hasan. If you don't know me, I'm a branch of Hasan. Entun karuni, ana farul Hasan. Sebtun nabiyyil Mustafa al-Mu'taman. If you don't know Hasan, Hasan is the grandson of the Prophet. So who am I? Ana farul Hasan. Now I wonder why these people, how they dared to fight these members of the family of the Prophet. In tunkiruni ana farul Hasan, sibtun nabiyyil Mustafa al-Mu'taman. هذا حسين كالأسير المرتهن. Look, this boy, how eloquently he's talking. You know who's this man who's hostage, like a hostage in your hands here? He's Hussein. هذا حسين كالأسير المرتهن بين أناس لا سقوا صوب المزن. He's now enthralled between people that I hope they never can taste the taste of rain and mercy of God. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم.
Allah. Morning's topic in discussion. Any comments? Any questions? Yes. Can we get a mic over there, please, for the sisters? Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. I wanted to talk about the subject of poverty. What about the people that are sitting on the streets who choose that poverty, that way of life? How does it come together with the poverty of the seeker of God?
You signed out already? We're not done with you, Sayyid.
Working? Yeah. Well, that poverty is very different, of course. Whether we are rich or poor, we have to feel this poverty which is mentioned here. Tie ourselves in poverty, in that understanding of poverty. Now, when we come to the outside world, then of course some people are poor, some people are rich, some have chosen to be poor, and some have not chosen to be poor, just because They don't have the means. Now, for those who have chosen to be poor, we will talk about it when we talk about our interaction with the world. But in a nutshell, Islam does not advise us to choose to be poor. It's not something like, for example, certain Christian orders advise their followers to be poor. Or, of course, we have some ascetic orders in Islam as well, advise to poverty. We don't have that, especially in Shia Islam, we don't have that. They don't advise us to be poor. They advise us to feel that poverty in our heart when we are interacting with God. Yeah.
Hussein, we'll get a mic over here, please.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. I recently was given a paper by Dr. Ali Shariati called Red Shiism and Black Shiism. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but you probably are. In it, he posits the theory that the Shiism that we have today is mostly about mourning, and that he describes as Black Shiism. And whereas what he believes is that Red Shiism, which is what we should be having an objective towards, is about mourning on the day of Ashura, and then ensuring that that mourning leads us to try and endeavor to achieve social justice in the world, maybe the eradication of poverty or whatever. I wondered if I interpreted the reading of that paper correctly, if in your opinion I did, or is there something more to it than that? And perhaps you could comment on that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Of course, this is a translation of one of his lectures, which was then published in form of a book called Tashayyu Alawi wa Tashayyu Safavi. Of course, because Alawi and Safavi doesn't make sense for an English-speaking person, it has been translated as black and red. What he says is correct in the sense that if we really want to limit the memory of Karbala into mourning, just ritualistic mourning, we have done injustice to the whole issue, because Hussein was not killed so that we only mourn. That mourning should have a function, and the function is that we remember the epic, we remember the cause for which Hussein stood, the cause that Hussein stood for, and then we try, of course, to bring it about in our daily life or in our contemporary life. That is what he says. Now, of course, the book caused lots of controversy when it was published because it was misunderstood. Some people thought that he's against mourning and against sort of grieving for Hussein alayhi salam. He didn't mean that. He meant that we have to give this a sort of direction. And then he mentions certain things. For example, he says that some people say in one of the majalis of Imam Hussein, for example, people were cooking food, and someone who did not believe anything about faith or whatever just came there and passing by something of that wood fire hit his eyes, and some tears came out of it, and he was forgiven for the tear which came out of his eye for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He mentions these things, funny things which have been actually created as myth around the whole issue of Karbala. And we see, of course, some of these manifestations in even worse ways in certain cultures. That's the ritual has become a ritual for itself, not having any direction. So, yes, of course, this is what everyone would say, that Ashura, Karbala should give us direction. This is what Imam Khomeini was always saying, that we have to learn lessons from Karbala. Whatever we have is from Karbala. That means whatever we are doing, whatever we are aiming at, is a lesson that we have learned from Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
We have a question here.
Alaykum as-salam.
I find it extremely difficult to come to terms with the...
Okay.
You know, if he's not agree with the question, he turns it off.
So I'll be gentle with my questions. Extremely difficult to come to terms with the concept that Shaitan said to God, "You created me." And yet we do know that all creations are through God. And then at the same time you're saying that we should dissociate ourselves with the earthy things in order to go up there. Yet all the earthy things are created by God.
Yeah.
So really, very difficult. So if these creations that are there, or these teasers, so to speak, that leads us to do certain things that we should not be doing, were not there to start with, we probably wouldn't have done it. As a physician, I can tell you one thing. When you treat patients that are sort of hooked up on smoking or drinking or obesity, for instance, one of the things we tell them, you avoid certain things. Like if you're obese, avoid keeping chocolates and things like that in your home. Otherwise, you'll go for it. So if these things were not there, maybe you wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, very good. Exactly the same argument of Shaitan. No, I'm joking. You know, when I said we have to detach ourselves from worldly things, I didn't mean to dissociate completely. We cannot, of course. For living, we need, of course, money, we need food, we need many things that we have to cater for. What is usually advised is that your heart should not be filled with these things. Your heart should be filled with love of God rather than love of these things. You see, you may live very comfortably in this world, but you are not attached to it. That line of Rumi, which says, the water in the ship is destruction of the ship. The water outside the ship is the something that ship would moves upon, isn't it? The world inside the heart would kill us. The world outside the heart is our something that we can rely upon, isn't it? As I said, we'll talk about our relationship with dunya later on. However, you said if these things were not here, of course we wouldn't have had all these difficulties. What is it there? You see, Allah has created in us ambition. We always want to go towards perfection. We want more. We want to incessantly move and progress. Okay, this is very good. Allah has put it for us there. Has given us intellect, eyes, ears, to use it for that purpose. Now, if I mistake perfection with worldly accumulation of money, for example, and if I use my intellect to deceive others out of their money, to get it for myself, and because Allah has given me free will, because without that free will, that perfection wouldn't come, then I am misusing whatever is given to me. Without those things, I couldn't have reached perfection. With those things, especially the free will, I can, of course, harm myself as well. It's just like anything else you give to anybody. I mean, you give money to, for example, your son. God forbid he uses it to go to buy drugs, for example. Okay? Now, you don't give money to him to go and buy drugs. You give him money to go and do business. But he misuses it. Now, should you give him money or shouldn't give him money? Should you give things to people, give freedom to people to do things, or you shouldn't? The point is, whatever is in us, whatever quality is in us, is there for a good purpose. Because of that freedom, which is a prerequisite for our perfection, we must misuse them. And that's why, of course, God is warning us all the time, do not misuse whatever I have given you. I don't know whether this answers your question or not.
Please, sure.
Turn it off, please.
He's digging himself, you know. He qualified. He stated that he was a physician, and I've got something to say to him.
I just continue with my shaitanic, what do you call it, personality, I suppose. You know, when you mention about Rumi and his boat, if the water was not inside as opposed to water outside, I understand the concept of what you're saying. But who was the person who was responsible to bring the water inside?
It's you.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. Who was responsible? Yeah. Who was responsible for a person going through the process of becoming whatever he is?
No.
Shaitanically, as opposed to...
This argument is a wrong argument, and Quran has mentioned this in several occasions.
So you get me out of the shaitan part, right?
No.
I'll be out of the shaitanic part.
The first person who used this argument was shaitan, saying that you made me to go astray. And God, of course, says it's your fault, it's not my fault. You misused whatever I gave you. Now, of course, this is... being humorous, I don't want to offend. For example, we have وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ أَشْرَكُوا لَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهِ مَا عَبَدْنَا مِن دُونِهِ مِن شَيْءٍ نَحْنُ وَلَا أَبَاؤُنَا وَمَا حَرَّمْنَا مِن دُونِهِ مِن شَيْءٍ. The mushrikeen say, if God willed, neither us nor our fathers would have worshipped anything beside him. And if he wished, we wouldn't have legislated things that we legislate. God says they say it out of ignorance. And this is repeated in many, many different places. For example, in Surah Yasin, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ أَنْفِقُوا مِمَّا رَزَقَكُمُ اللَّهُ قَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنُطْئِمُ مَنْ لَوْ يَشَاءُ اللَّهُ أَطْعَمَهُ. When we tell them, feed the poor, they say, well, if God wanted, he would have fed them. Why should we feed them now? So we are actually contradicting God. Now, this idea has led Ash'aris to think, this is not something unique. I mean, a great chunk of Muslim scholars taught like this, because they thought everything is under the power of God. So how come? How can we defy the power of God? This line, which is attributed to Khayyam, he says, if I drink wine, God knew from eternity that I, at this juncture of my life, would drink wine. So if I do not drink wine, I have defied God, isn't it? I mean, this is a sort of argument. Because it is very complicated, it's very difficult for us to analyze this, how in the absolute power of God we can do things which would somehow defy the good which God wills in the world. Is actually a confusion between two categories of wills of God. One will of God is legislative will. He tells us this is right, this is wrong, don't do it, do this, don't do that, and we may oppose, okay? A higher category of will is that, yes, Allah allows all these things to be done with our free will. Allah allows it. If he doesn't want, we cannot, of course, do sin. If he doesn't want, we cannot do anything wrong. But he allows that. So that's a higher category of will. There is a lower category of will. إِن تَكْفُرُوا فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ غَنِيٌّ عَنْكُمْ. If you go against God, if you are ungrateful, God is, of course, not in need. وَلَا يَرْضَى لِعِبَادِهِ الْكُفْرِ. But he doesn't like it for you. So he doesn't like kufr, but he allows it to happen for a higher purpose. This is a long argument. I know we have to somehow discuss this in full, more details.
He's talking about, he's trying to put Cadbury's out of business and ask him, you know, God allowed him to become a doctor so others can be sick. Never mind. Raza, you had a question. If we get a mic over there, Raza, would you come up here, please? It's like what my dentist said to the assistant. He says, make him open his mouth so you can ring the cash register.
Assalamu alaikum. I have one comment and I have one question, if I can. Yeah, one. The comment is about yesterday when you, our sister asked the question about grief, which you raised, and you said you had to go through grief in order to find peace at the end. And the words were used about the finding the light at the end of the tunnel. In my reading of, say, for example, Buddhist philosophy, it is, the whole purpose is to talk about the end of suffering. And end of suffering right in this world through proper teachings and proper practices of character, akhlaq, whatever you may call it. So, and my sense is that these teachings, whether Islamic or Buddhism, doesn't matter, is to supposed to help you to lead a life of harmony in this world and not necessarily wait till akhir, for example. Because if it cannot help you in this world and only hope for the next world, I think that we have a big, I have a problem with that, but I'll leave to you to make a comment. My real question today is, I want to extend the question of Dr. Ashiq Najrali here about shaitan. I want to understand, is shaitan a concept? Is it physical? Is it something that changes its form as the situation changes? What is shaitan is? Is it in your, it's evil? It's a concept of evil? If you can elaborate on this, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Shaitan is a creation of God. The Quran is very explicit about it. He was a creation of God. Kana min al-jinn, he was from jinn, and jinn is a species. We shouldn't deny if, for example, we are told that there are other species of creation in this world which we do not see, which is completely in a different dimension, for example. As we are created from dust, they are created from the blaze of the smokeless fire, from the heat. Not that they are heat, in the same way that we are not dust, of course. And if we get dusty, we don't want it on our body. But, and if they get heat, they don't want it. So they are created from different material. We are created from different material, and they are very different from us because of the origin, very different. And shaitan was from that. And the reason he was somehow became stupid was this origin. When Allah said to angels, prostrate to God, to Adam. And of course, Iblis had gone to a high position that whenever a command went to the angels, it included him as well. He said, I do not. خَلَقْتَنِي مِن نَار وَخَلَقْهُ مِن تِين. You have created me out of fire and created him out of dust. And fire is better than dust. Now, one of the exegetes goes into elaborate discussion saying that no, dust is better than fire. Yeah, that there are many benefits in soil that you cannot find in fire. Of course, it's a counter argument, it's the shaitanic counter argument. None is better than any other. It's just all creation of God. So, he's a creation. That creation, that species, has certain qualities. One of their qualities, for example, the way human beings enjoy to go and play and gamble, okay? They enjoy. Why human beings should enjoy gambling or should enjoy drinking? If you think about it, it's very, very difficult to understand. These pleasures actually come from somewhere that we do not realize the root of it. Now, one of their pleasures is to find a soul which could be penetrated, because they are not of our kind physical. Our physical, they are physical because they are from fire, and fire is physical, okay? But not our kind. When they find a soul which could be penetrated, they go and play with it. This is their entertainment. Now, it's not Iblis, the big one. It's a species, okay? Many of them like that. And actually, in Surah Qaf, chapter 50, a very interesting thing is mentioned, and that is this shaitan, this small shaitan, which has matched with this person because have found a way to penetrate, and then play with his mind, play with his heart, plays, the whisper is like that. For example, when he gets angry, okay, kill him, go on, go on. He like this, for example, and instigates. The only thing that they do, instigate. And they enjoy this. They enjoy doing this. This is their nature. On the Day of Judgment, both of them are put before God. Both of them. Because he is a creature with free will, and the jinn is a creature with free will. Both of them are put before God and said, okay, what was the situation? Why did you instigate him? He says, قَالَ قَرِينُهُ رَبَّنَا مَا أَتْغَيْتُ. I didn't instigate him. Look, now he's lying there. وَلَكِنْ كَانَ فِي ذَلَالٍ بَعِيدٍ. He was far away from guidance. Actually, he tempted me. It was a very nice, sort of beautiful soul for me. I could play with it. I could entertain myself. I went. Well, I can kind of feel the lal and bait. So put him in hell, not me. قَالَ لَا تَخْتَصِمُوا لَدَيْ. Do not argue before me. وَقَدْ قَدَّمْتُ إِلَيْكُمْ بِالْوَعِيدِ. I have warned both of you. So the same way that Allah has warned us through our prophets that we should not be deceived by instigations, he has warned the jinn that they should not be deceived by hearts and souls that they see, which is ripe for instigating them. Yeah, so they are creatures. However, the only source of deception for us is not shaitan. Because before shaitan coming to us, we have to show a way that they could penetrate in. So the nafs, what we call the nafs in deception is stronger than shaitan. Then when وَمَنْ يَعْشُ عَنْ ذِكْرَ الرَّحْمَانِ, whoever becomes blind of remembrance of God, what does that mean? There is no God. I don't believe in God whatsoever. نُقَيَّذْ لَهُ شَيْطَانًا. A shaitan is appointed to him. One of these jinn. They found them, you see? They are roaming around and suddenly say, oh, this Bahmanpur, oh, let's go and play with him, that's very nice. I whisper this one, you whisper that one, they play, they enjoy, just like we enjoy from gambling, for example, okay? And then, نُقَيَّذْ لَهُ شَيْطَانًا فَهُوَ لَهُ قَرِينٌ. Then they don't leave. They find a good soul, yeah? By good, I mean good to them. They find a good soul. They are for life. They marry with him. They go. فَإِنَّهُمْ لَيَسُدُّونَهُمْ عَنِ السَّبِيلِ. They, all the time, whatever is not good, they say it's good. Whatever is bad, whatever is good, they say it's not good, it's bad. Until when this person dies, that jinn leaves him, because jinn live longer. Okay? Leaves him and try to find another one. Another plane for his plays, for his gambling, so to speak. But of course, they will be judged harshly because they are not allowed to do it. And we are not, of course, allowed to let them in, and we let them in. Maybe even more. Maybe even more. One shaitan, at least. You see, it's not that a shaitan is sort of born with us. No, you see, they are living around. This gen are living around. If they find some heart which could be penetrated, hopelessness, disappointment, resentment of God and these things, disbelief, they find a way to penetrate and they come. إِنَّهُ لَيْسَ لَهُ سُلْطَانٌ عَلَى الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَلَى رَبِّهِمْ يَتَوَكَّلُونَ. There is no power for him over those who believe and rely on God. إِنَّمَا سُلْطَانُهُ عَلَى الَّذِينَ يَتَوَلَّونَ. His power is over those who go after him. That's how it is. Yeah.
Just a point of clarification. I know you have said this, and we read it in the Quran, مَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. Yeah. Now, the jinn, shaitan, Allah, you said he created shaitan.
To worship him, yes.
Yeah, but he was not shaitan before.
No, his name was not shaitan. Of course, shaitan means evil. Okay,
Thank you.
His name was Iblis.
Seven.
Now, Iblis has become synonymous to shaitan now.
Right, after that, yes.
Yeah.
Right, so when we're saying that he created it, so it's not my fault. You created him. No, he fell from grace, because on the day of judgment, like you said out there, he's going to stand out with me out there and says, why did you do it?
Yes.
The Lord is going to ask, right? Why did you do it?
Yeah.
I followed him. He says, this fool, I sold my soul a long time ago. You had yours. Given the time at the moment, doctor, please.
Masalla ala Muhammad.